Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ellen Berman, and I'm counsel for Southern California Edison Company. Both Edison and FERC agree that this is a case of contract interpretation. The problem is that FERC did not interpret the contract correctly under any theory of law. The Commission's ruling that Edison forfeits a third of the value of the contract because of a late billing is not supported under any either California or general contract law or Commission precedent, especially here where the remedy has no relationship to actual damages. Edison timely built the facilities, which was the primary purpose of the contract, and Corona has been using those facilities since they're in service date and will use them indefinitely. Excuse me. In its decision, FERC committed three separate errors, any one of which would be grounds for reversal, and I'm going to touch on all three. First, the Commission held that it didn't need to apply California law, even though the contract said that it did. Second, the Commission incorrectly concluded, with no analysis, that the 12-month true-up period in the contract was a condition precedent, which would result in forfeiture if not met, rather than a covenant of the contract, which is compensable by damages. And finally, none of the Commission's own precedent that it cited actually supports the conclusion that it reached. In fact, much of it supports Edison's theory of the case that forfeiture was an excessive penalty here. Under general...
Is Corona still paying this interconnection, that facilities charge?
Yes, there's a monthly charge, but it's paying one-third less than the charge should be because part of the formula is the interconnection facilities cost. And so it will forever be paying.
We're recouping a little.
We're recouping some. Yes, we are.
How much is at stake in this case?
It's not very much. It's about, in this particular case, the facilities, the difference between the actual and estimated were about $18,000, and the monthly charge, the difference is about $50 a month, although that's forever, or for the life
well,
of the facilities.
Well, until the next go-round on the next filing.
So. No, FERC has said we can't collect these costs at all. It would be a forfeiture of that money.
Right.
The issue here, though, is this has bigger implications for the company. Although, you know, we try very hard to get our billings out on time, a ruling that this is a condition precedent is very problematic. We have hundreds of these contracts, and, you know, we do our very best, and we regret this error, but it's just an inappropriate remedy for a late billing. Actually, that's a good. We can't. Under this contract, we perhaps could have, but since this contract, the Commission has issued the Large Generator Interconnection Agreement, which is a standardized agreement. And actually, for many interconnections, the time is shorter than 12 months. So for smaller projects, it could be 3 to 6 months, which we're changing our processes and procedures. But sometimes we have difficulties getting subcontractors to bill us on time. There are a lot of processes that it has to go through. These are major facilities in some cases. And although we do our very best to get the bills out on time, it sometimes doesn't happen. And what we're asking here is for...
The 12-month period runs from when?
The facility's in service date.
In service.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, and what we're asking for here is a proper remedy, and that's all we're seeking. And we don't believe that FERC has justified its decision on any rationale. Under contract law, or really any general contract law, the 12-month true-up period, under Edison would have been able to collect the true-up amount. And Corona's remedy would have been limited to actual damages. Corona hasn't alleged any damages here. The Commission, for some reason, said that it need not apply California law, even though Section 23 of the contract says that California law will govern and the contract will be construed in accordance with California law, except where there is conflicting federal law. FERC's refusal to examine California law is odd, considering that it says that it is required to interpret the terms of the contract. So this was legal error. In Sam Rayburn versus FERC, this court held, quote, there is no reason that the recognized law governing contracts should be ignored merely because the subject matter of a contract falls under FERC's jurisdiction. And the Fifth Circuit has ruled similarly in the Pennzoil and Nicor cases as well. And here, in this case, the parties actually had a choice of law provision. In those cases, they didn't, and the court still held that. So FERC just hasn't given a good reason why it need not apply California law. And under California law, this provision clearly would not have been a condition precedent. Conditions precedent aren't favored in contract law, and there needs to be plain and unambiguous language in order for a court to rule that there's, or the commission in this case, to rule that a provision is a condition precedent. The commission didn't engage in any analysis of the relevant law or even examine the contract language to explain why the 12-month window would create a condition precedent. This was a minor provision of the contract. It didn't go to the heart of the contract, and Edison timely performed the purpose of the contract, and Corona was using the facilities. The contract just doesn't clearly state in any way that Edison would forfeit its right to collect the true-up amount if it doesn't bill on time. For example, it didn't provide if Edison doesn't bill Corona for the actual cost within 12 months of the in-service date, Corona has no obligation to pay those costs. That might have been different. Also, the contract doesn't contain a time is of the essence provision. And Section 22 of the contract, which is the waiver section, states that any delay short of any statutory period of limitations in asserting or enforcing a right shall not be deemed a waiver of such right. So we think that's relevant as well to show that this was not a condition precedent.
Go back to your discussion of whether this is a condition precedent. There are some California cases that say the words subject to are generally construed as a condition precedent. And that language does appear
in Section 13,
it doesn't appear in Section 13. It appears, you know, let me see, find this, a reference to Section 13. The agreement's provision says, payment would be based on SCE's cost estimates and shall be subject to later adjustment pursuant to sections 13.181 and 13.182.
I believe the subject to there is referring to the later adjustment.
Yes.
Here, the actual language that I think is relevant is within 12 months following the interconnection facilities in service date, SCE shall determine the actual recorded interconnection facilities costs and provide Corona with the final invoice. And a breach of that provision would be a breach of contract, and that's not a condition precedent. It also just isn't reasonable. Under the commission's interpretation, if we had sent the bill or made the filing on day 366, we would have forfeited a third of the contract for being one day late. That's the problem that we have with the holding, is that it doesn't make sense.
Can I ask you why SCE couldn't have gone through paragraph 18.2 of the interconnection agreement, where it says nothing shall be construed as affecting the right of SEC to unilaterally make application to FERC for a change in rates, so forth, or contracts related thereto? I mean, why is this not a contract related at least to that interconnection facilities rate? And you could go up on that.
We absolutely agree. This is what we filed the new rate under. And what FERC said was, even though 18.2 is here, there's no guarantee that it will be accepted, and FERC has to make a determination whether it's just and reasonable. But then FERC acknowledges that that determination is based on what the contract says and a proper interpretation of the contract. And then it doesn't interpret the contract correctly.
Well, did you apply for a change in it?
We applied for a change in the rate because the contract specifically allowed us to. The $18,000 is the differential is considered a rate, and we have to file that at FERC in order to get the cost. And so we filed under, and that's in our briefs. We quote Section 18.2, and that we argued that at FERC, saying the contract does allow us. This isn't a Mobile Sierra type contract where you didn't reserve your right to make a filing. We reserved our right, and we specifically contemplated that we would make this filing. The problem here is we were late.
Well, how about this? Could you not unilaterally make application to the FERC for a change in this contract, changing the date, changing 12 months to, 2 years or whatever in the future?
I mean,
that's a contract relating to this the rates.
I think the problem with doing that is that would be contrary to what the parties had agreed to. And
yes, Corona, what does unilaterally make application for a change or contract relating thereto?
It's a term of art that we use that we, so I believe we could make that filing, but I don't think that FERC would accept the filing changing the term after the fact to make the time period 2 years.
I'm not talking about after the fact. I'm talking about from here on in so that.
Oh, from here on in we can't because there's the large generator interconnection agreement, which is a standardized agreement for okay. interconnections generally. So we couldn't. And the problem here is we do try to get the billings in 1 year, and we are usually successful. The issue here is that sometimes things happen. Change of personnel, we don't get the bill from the subcontractor, whatever may be. And we did investigate this, and we really couldn't find out what happened. What we're asking is for an appropriate remedy. And we think FERC is wrong that it didn't interpret the contract and look at California law. But even under its own precedent, nothing that it cites actually supports that the 12 months would be a condition precedent or that a forfeiture would be appropriate here. In fact, many of the cases that it talks about supports our view. I shouldn't say many. They only cite to four cases, four major cases. But we think one or two of the cases support the commission's longstanding precedent that a utility shouldn't be required to build facilities at a loss. We had made the point in our briefs that this was similar to cases where utility had collected money from a customer but hadn't filed the rate. And in those cases, the commission has said the time value of money is the appropriate remedy. Here, because Corona hasn't alleged any damages, we think that's the appropriate remedy as well. The commission said, we find that public utilities should not be in a position of having to construct interconnection and transmission facilities at a loss. That's from a Southern California Edison case. And we agree with that proposition. So I've reserved 3 minutes, if that's okay.
All right.
Do you have any questions? Thank you.
All right, Mr. Dennis.
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Jeff Dennis on behalf of the Commission. Let me start with the point you were making, Judge Henderson, regarding the unilateral filing rights that Edison has in this contract. Edison has reserved there the right to seek a change in the rate, but that doesn't necessarily overcome the consistent and longstanding precedent of the Commission, which is cited in these orders, that rate filings inconsistent with contractual obligations are invalid. And that was really the point the Commission was making here, and that's the point that the Supreme Court has made in the Mobile and the Sierra and the Memphis cases, and that this Court in particular made in the Richmond case that the Commission also cites.
So when this paragraph says nothing contained herein shall be construed as effective, and so forth, the language I've been discussing, we're supposed to read it, nothing other than the fact that FERC is not going to ever allow a unilateral change to a contract.
Well, the Commission could certainly allow a unilateral contract to the change if it were to find that the existing contractual rate is unjust and unreasonable. I did not find that here, and in fact wasn't even asked to make that finding. It was simply asked to allow unilateral change. In addition, let me step back, actually, because I want to make sure that I make the point that we made in our briefs regarding Edison's standing here. We submit to the Court that Edison's injury in this case is entirely of its own making and therefore not fairly traceable to the Commission's orders. In two respects, in fact, Edison has voluntarily made decisions that have resulted in it not being able to collect these additional costs.
Well, that's the issue, though, is whether they're able to collect.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, it's like saying in a contract case, well, the plaintiff doesn't have really a good argument about why they're due money under the contract, therefore they don't have standing.
Well, that's certainly the Court will have to, at least as the Court recently said, peek at the merits to understand the claims.
We have to decide the merits to decide there's no standing. If you're wrong about whether Edison has inflicted an injury on itself, if you're wrong that Edison can't collect this money, then they have standing, right?
If you were to find that any portion of Edison's injury was due to the commission's orders, yes, Edison would have standing. I agree with that. However, what we're submitting here today is that this case looks exactly like the recent Brotherhood case, where the union, through its own action, traded away its right to bargain under exempted transactions. Likewise here, Edison in the first instance agreed to a contract provision that limited its time to recover these costs. Otherwise, Edison would not have had to seek a rate change before the commission in the first place. It merely would have had to file almost a compliance type filing to show the additional costs.
Why doesn't California law apply?
Your Honor, there was no issue of California law for the commission to apply here. The commission found, and the commission found that for two reasons. First, this was a rate filing under the Federal Power Act, and the commission's job here was to determine whether the costs that Edison was seeking to collect are just and reasonable. And second, there was really no breach at issue here. The only party alleging a breach was Edison itself. Edison here simply failed to avail itself of the opportunity that it had in the contract to collect these costs. And the commission found that there was no breach. Corona, the protester in this case, didn't allege a breach. It simply sought to enforce the rate on file.
I'm having a little trouble following that. The question that Edison wanted determined under California law is whether strict compliance with the 12-month deadline was required under the terms of the contract. Now, why doesn't what federal law preempts state law on that issue?
Well, certainly the Federal Power Act's command that rates be just and reasonable, and the commission found that under its longstanding precedent,
That depends on what the contract provides.
Well, the contract clearly provides on its face that within 12 months, that Edison has a 12-month time period within which to collect these costs.
Right.
And the commission's holding was that under longstanding federal precedent regarding just and reasonable rates, a rate that's contrary to a contractual provision such as that is simply not just and reasonable.
Doesn't that assume the question, though? The contract does say 12 months, but suppose it's clear as a bell under California law that the 12-month period can be enforced only if there is prejudice to the party against whom the money will be collected. Suppose that's clear as a bell under California law. What federal law says we don't apply that?
The best answer I can give you, Your Honor, is the Commission's Federal Power Act obligation to enforce contracts that are on file. And this was a contract that was on file with the Commission, and so the Commission has discretion.
By their terms. You enforce them by their terms. And one of the terms of the contract on file with the Commission is they interpret it according to California law, unless there's contrary federal law.
Except as otherwise provided by federal law. And in this case, Edison was seeking to collect the costs under federal law, and therefore the commission applied federal law here. I think Edison's real argument before the commission was that this is a non-material breach of the agreement under California law. And as I mentioned earlier, there was no breach found here, and there was no breach alleged except by Edison, the breaching party itself. And so that's what led the commission to that particular holding.
Can you give an example of what would be a breach under California, when you would recognize California law? Because it sounds like what you're saying is because this was a contract that FERC, a contract that FERC was to review or whatever, that anything that came up would be under Federal Power Act. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
I don't think that's true, Your Honor. There are certainly several instances where California law might apply. Obviously, I'm going to have to give you a hypothetical and change the facts, but let's suppose that this was a filing under Section 206 by Corona arguing that Edison had breached the contract, either in this regard or even in any other regard, and therefore the issues before the commission turned on an application of state law, perhaps interpretation of certain terms in the contract or certain bargains between the parties. In that case, what the commission normally does in those types of cases is it looks to, and it applies some factors that it's long held, to decide whether it will assert its jurisdiction, which it has over rate matters such as this, or whether it will decline jurisdiction and allow this case to go forward in a state forum. And that's when the commission finds that an issue before it is otherwise litigable in state court. whether this rate filing was just and reasonable is not an issue that's otherwise litigable in state court.
Yeah, but what would be is whether or not this 12-month period is a condition precedent. As a term of the contract, which I thought I just heard you say, that's an example of something that would be governed by California law.
That's assuming that someone had made the argument that there was a breach here and the commission had actually found that there was a breach that required application of state law. The difference in this case is that the commission found no breach that would require application of state law.
So we should read that provision that says applies California law unless it's federal law applies otherwise as saying apply California law if there's a breach.
Or some other matter where the issue turns on state law. All the cases that Edison cites in their brief regarding the commission's obligation to apply state law, in every single one of those cases, the issue before the commission turned on state law. It turned on a direct application of the state's law. And I'll repeat again, here the commission found that there was no issue for which it needed to apply state law.
If we conclude that California law should have been applied, the case has to go back to the commission then.
Well, the commission didn't address California law in any respect, so I couldn't tell you what the commission's holding would have been. I think I would submit here as commission counsel that this provision of the contract is clear on its face. It's unambiguous.
I mean, it may be that under California law, the Southern California Edison would lose under California law, but that wouldn't be because of Chenery, we wouldn't be able to make that determination, right?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. In terms of the citations that the commission offered, those citations all were offered for the basic tenets of just and reasonable rate making, and that's what the commission was applying those for. And furthermore, those cases all supported the commission in that in each instance, the commission held firm that contractual obligations are to be respected in subsequent rate filings. And in none of those cases was there a specific contract on file like we have here that dictated the terms of when additional costs could be recovered. That was the added factor here that the commission found that simply wasn't available in any of those other cases. And that goes as well for the remedy that Edison seeks to apply here, which is simply to forfeit the time value of money. Well, that's really no penalty at all because they haven't collected any money to begin with, and they weren't seeking any interest on that money. But secondly, in Carolina, the commission was devising a penalty for violations of the Federal Power Act by late filing rates. Here, the commission explained that it didn't think that kind of a remedy should apply because, again, we had this clear and specific contractual provision that the parties agreed to that limited their ability to collect these costs. So that was a significant difference between those cases. If the panel doesn't have any further questions, I'm happy to cede my time.
Thank you. I just wanted to touch on a few points that counsel made. First, the standing question, I think that's easily dispensed with. This was an order against Southern California Edison. I just want to point out Brotherhood was a different case because instead of using names, I'll use letters. But in that case, the board was deciding whether A could buy, lease, et cetera, track from B. And C had bargained away its right in a collective bargaining agreement. That if that board decision came out, you know, a certain way, that it couldn't bargain. Here, this order was directly against Edison by an agency that we're regulated by, and it's clear that we have standing. Also, one thing that counsel for FERC did not do was point to, we do believe California law applies, and that's clear, but there was he didn't point to any commission precedent that would support this remedy. In fact, a couple of the cases that the commission itself had cited, point to the opposite result. For example, in VEPCO that the commission cites saying a utility can't sit on its rights, the commission actually let the utility recover those costs. And Koch or Koch, which is a case FERC cited for standard of review, in that case, the commission, the court, I'm sorry, reversed the commission's imposition of a refund remedy where the utility didn't receive a windfall and the error was ministerial. Although the court in that case had upheld FERC's interpretation of the tariff, they said the remedy wasn't right. So there's no federal law here that trumps. There's no FERC precedent. There's nothing here that would suggest that this remedy is appropriate. And I also, you know, completely disagree that this is not a breach of contract case. It's very clear that Corona was alleging a breach when it argued that it didn't need to pay the remedy.
Do we have any cases in this circuit defining, upholding a contractual provision that has a choice of law and requiring FERC to look to state law to interpret the contract?
I haven't seen one where there's a choice of law provision, but right. In Sam Rayburn.
There's that Pennzoil case, but that's from the Fifth Circuit.
Yeah, and there's the Sam Rayburn case is also applicable. In that case, the FPC said that it was back in 75, said that the parties couldn't modify a contract through subsequent course of conduct. And the DC, this circuit, this court said that the FPC was required to look at state law in making that determination. Under Texas law, the parties could modify their contracts through subsequent course of conduct, and FERC erred by not looking at that. So that case is relevant. And I think the fact that there was no choice of law provision in that case makes this case stronger, where the parties have agreed. Any other questions?
Okay.
What's
Thank
the
you
citation
for
that? On that?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Sam Rayburn versus.
I've got it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.